Diversity and inclusion is just that. It's the diversity that all the different perspectives bring to the table. And by definition, we will have to get comfortable being uncomfortable.
That's Roy Weathers, Vice Chair of Societal Engagement and Policy Solutions at PwC and CEO of the CEO Action for Racial Equity. This is Heather Horn, and thank you for joining me for the second episode of our Forecast 2021 podcast miniseries. Today, we're going to get comfortable with being uncomfortable. That's a theme you'll hear throughout my interview with Roy as we talk about the business movement that has prompted hundreds of companies to bring their heads, hearts, and wallets to the table to better understand and solve societal challenges on race, equity, and social justice. It's a challenging topic that requires a lot of effort and attention, but change begins with a willingness to do something different and, as Roy taught me, sharpen your listening skills. So I'm happy you're here listening with me to this important conversation. Roy, thank you so much for joining me today. Looking forward to our conversation about diversity and inclusion. I think it'd be helpful to for our audience to understand a little bit about your background, because 6 months ago, you were leading our tax practice. And now today, I know you're charged with leading the CEO Action for Racial Equity. And so clearly, that's been an important shift. But can you just start off by explaining to us how you got involved and why this is so relevant right now?
Yeah. So hello, Heather, and it's great to be here with everyone. This is a very dynamic time for sure. And this topic is as well. So Heather, just as you indicated, my background is I'm a tax professional, CPA partner. And for a number of years, I've served clients in that capacity. And most recently ran our U.S. and Mexico tax practice, about 11,000 professionals and a ton of great clients. And so after spending 4 years of running the practice, was asked to take on a different role in policy and societal engagement as one of our U.S. vice chairs. And so here we are. I'm focused on our CEO Action for Racial Equity Initiative, amongst other things.
Already a bunch of questions from that. But maybe to start off, can you explain exactly what that initiative is for maybe our listeners who may not be familiar with it?
Sure. If you don't mind, I'll go back a little bit in time. So about 3.5, almost 4 years ago now, Tim Ryan, our CEO, started an initiative with a number of CEOs called CEO Action for Diversity and Inclusion. That effort was primarily centered around CEOs coming together, taking a pledge to drive greater diversity and inclusion inside the four walls of their organizations. There were really three pledges at the time. One, to create a safe space to have a conversation, to share best practices, and to provide some training. We've since added a fourth, to have a plan and share that plan with your board. Mid-summer, when the George Floyd incident happened and a number of other things that were going on, Tim reached out to a number of the CEOs that were part of CEO Action for Diversity and Inclusion. I'll say that when we first started, there were a few hundred CEOs as part of this initiative. Today, there are well over 1,500 CEOs that have signed on and taken that pledge and are part of CEO Action for Diversity and Inclusion. And as I said, mid-June, Tim reached out to a number of those CEOs to ask if they would be interested in engaging in this notion of CEO action, but with a focus on public policy specifically related to societal challenges that we were seeing play out right in front of us, the area of race and equity and social justice. And about 150 CEOs raised their hand and said, yes, let's do this and let's start to focus on and step into the public policy space, which is new for corporations in this area. Clearly, corporate America appreciates policy development and fully engages if it's their sector or their industry, or if it's something that's really germane to their organization. But this area of public policy for racial equity, looking at our laws, thinking about change was something new. Having agreed to that, Tim then asked me to lead that. So here we are.
Well, so, and that's a perfect lead in actually to my other question for you, because obviously you said you came from a tax background. And when I think about tax, I think about policy. But other than being involved from a policy perspective, from your tax lens, have you been interested in this type of policy before you got this call from Tim?
So if I go back even further in my career, about 13 years ago, again, as a newer partner, I was asked to spend a couple of years as our firm's chief diversity officer. And so I was serving clients and at the same time thinking about diversity and inclusion, again, almost 14 years ago, in the role as our firm's chief diversity officer. So my background in many ways positioned me, I think, to focus on this area at this point in time in my career.
Yeah, although it seems like much bigger scale right now, just given everything that's going on, as you said, from a broader societal perspective, it's kind of now going beyond our firm and looking more broadly from a policy point of view. So with that said then, Roy, how are you approaching this in terms of, if you think about it, through a business lens?
Yeah, so, and maybe I'll start by just giving you the definition, the mission of what CEO Action for Racial Equity is. Our mission is to identify, develop, and promote sustainable, scalable policy that address systemic racism and social injustice and provides for societal well-being. And so that's a lot packed into that. And one of the unique things about CEO Action for Racial Equity is we are taking a business lens to it. So what does that mean? It means we look at data. We think about solving and solutioning in a way that arguably looks like something a management consulting firm would do as opposed to a more traditional way. And so we think about policy in three ways: new policy, policy that needs to be amplified and or that's counterproductive. And we think about it through a social contract perspective, which engages all the corporations. So we are taking a business-minded approach. That's what we do in corporations, in the corporate arena. And we're turning that attention on a different topic, a different subject, this notion of racial equity.
And then, Roy, there just seems like so many different initiatives right now in this area, which I think overall would be viewed very positively. But how is what you are doing different from maybe what's being talked about by the Business Roundtable or others?
Yeah. So first of all, I think there are so many organizations that are doing so many tremendously positive things. And I think that's what makes this moment in time unique. Maybe it's unique in a generation, candidly, as you really look at the wholesome conversation that's being had by corporate America throughout the country, but as citizens in this country. So it's a different time. For us, our initiative is based on a fellowship. So what does that mean? We've set out to create a 1,000-person fellowship. Our first entry group was 250. And those individuals came from 115 organizations. So what does that mean? That means companies, and some of the companies that are listening in today, have leaned in and lent the organization a fellow that would come and spend the next year to two working collaboratively with other fellows on this notion of policy from a racial equity perspective. We're looking at it from a state, city, and federal lens. So it's a large landscape, if you will, for us to do our work and our research. And so what makes us unique is, one, this notion of incredible talent from a fellow perspective, and two, bringing the voice of the many corporations, CEOs, and the like to the table to support, to back, to understand various policy initiatives. That makes us fairly unique.
So then, Roy, you know, we're talking so far very broadly in terms of this action that the firm and other companies are taking. But as you and I have talked about when we were preparing for this podcast, this is, you know, can be a very difficult topic. And specifically, it's a topic a lot of people can be very uncomfortable to talk about. And I think it's something, I think you and I are around the same tenure. If we think way back in our careers, this is not a topic we would have been discussing in a business environment. So how, if I'm someone who's interested, wants to do the right thing, again, from a more personal level, how can people think about this?
I want to start by just highlighting why I believe many companies have engaged in this conversation. And so, you know, many, and this is well written on notion of a well-being society is the best place to operate your business, right? We want a society that's healthy and functioning well. The second highlighting point is the customers and employees make up society that we're talking about. And so from a global perspective, it's challenging for an organization to be successful and not focus on your customers and your employees and things that are happening around you. You know, and I'll highlight what the BRT highlighted many, many months ago, that there are many components to functioning in an ecosystem for corporations, not just the stakeholders from a financial return perspective. It's also the community, and there are other elements of society that business should and successful businesses must focus on. And so that's the baseline where it starts. So if you're in an organization, you listen to this podcast, it's likely that you're a leader in many ways. And today, to lead diverse employees, to lead a diverse workforce, to understand the customer base, the unique opportunities to engage with a diverse customer base, you have to, what I call, increase your culture dexterity. You have to, you should, in your best interest, to dive into this. And so right to your question, well, it's challenging. It can be. And that's okay, right? And one of the things that I like to just highlight is there's no perfect way. And I'm an individual that it's really about intentions. It's really about what are you trying to do? Trying to do something positive outweighs being overly cautious and doing nothing. I heard a long time ago this notion of thinking about diversity and inclusion from one of three lenses: head, heart, wallet. And so what does that mean? It means, you know, is it theory? Is it a theoretical thing that you want to understand? You know, measurements, how does it work? How do we drive results from the heart? Let's do it because it's the right thing to do, or because it's financially in the best interest of your organization. And what I say, Heather, is it doesn't matter. They're all right. One approach is not better than the other. Pick one. Pick one that resonates with you. Pick one that makes sense to you, but lean into it and start to learn and be curious. And I would just encourage, if you're leading organizations or you're a up-and-coming leader, increasing, again, I call it your cultural dexterity and being curious and sharpening your listening skills and your ability to share are really, really important in this work.
So, Voy, to that point, the last one you just said, one thing I think that's interesting is often, at least superficially, if someone's thinking about diversity, they're thinking about race. But then if you think about inclusion, it's broader. So if someone was to ask you, what does diversity and inclusion mean to you? Can you give us a general definition?
Yeah. And I'm glad you highlighted. Diversity is all things different than what you bring to the table. And how you show up enhances the diversity. This notion of diversity is about all of us. It's about everyone. And yes, it's true that we, from time to time, focus on underrepresented minorities, or we may focus from a gender perspective, but it's all of that that makes the mosaic of diversity come to life. And inclusion is just that. So this notion of belonging and feeling as if you belong is really, I think, the best way to think about it. And so if you're running a department or you're running a group or you're running an organization, you want your employees to feel comfortable being part of that organization and being who they are and being authentically part of that organization. And that just doesn't magically happen. It's something that requires effort. It requires attention. And as leaders, it's one of the best things you can do. Getting that extra set of energy, that discretionary energy from our employees, from each other, that really comes when people feel like they belong. They really feel connected. And so diversity and inclusion is just that. It's the diversity that all the different perspectives bring to the table. And by definition, we will have to get comfortable being uncomfortable, get comfortable learning new things, get comfortable having people perceive us and focus on us in unique and different ways. That's where the answer is. It's on the other side of getting comfortable being uncomfortable.
So then, Roy, maybe to follow on that, what we're saying is that differences aren't necessarily bad, which I think sometimes how people think of them. It's just differences are different. And to your point, the more differences you have, you're actually creating a broader and brighter mosaic.
Absolutely. I couldn't say it better. And I will tell you from personal experience myself and experiences that I've seen with my colleagues, when you move into the difference, when you move into the diversity, which is different than your, maybe perhaps your experiences, and you go in with a level of curiosity that is welcoming, you expand and you grow. And when you do that, you get better at it. The more you do it, the better you get.
One of the things we always like to talk about on this podcast is, let's say I am the one running the department or running a specific group, and maybe my company hasn't embraced this as much as PwC or other companies that we're talking about. What could I do then as a leader of my group to encourage this conversation and really to encourage people who may feel different to feel like they belong?
Yeah. So you don't have to look very far, maybe your competition or maybe right around the corner, and you'll find other organizations that are, you can tell they're really striving hard to increase their cultural dexterity, to focus on diversity and inclusion. And many are starting to be more public about what it means to their organization, their employees, and their customers. You don't have to look very far. So if you're sitting inside an organization where the level of focus is not there, then A, you might need to be the one to ring that bell just from a competitive perspective. And I, you know, that's just one lens. Second, I would say, typically, if you're inside an organization and you feel compelled to help the organization move along, you're probably not the only one. Right? You may be the only one speaking up, but you're definitely not the only one with that perspective. And so one of the things I always say is look for those around you that have the same similar thought or concern and or, you know, motivated to help the organization move along. And then there are things like CEO Action for Diversity and Inclusion, because none of us have to go it alone in this journey. Look for others who similar organizations, or again, CEO Action for Diversity and Inclusion. It's 1,500 organizations. You know, our website has, you know, well over 800 ideas that are shared. You don't have to go very far. I think the most encouraging thing that I would say is, if you feel the organization should continue to grow in this effort, be a leader. The organization will thank you later if they don't thank you now. And don't go it alone. There's plenty of opportunities to join in with others.
So then, Roy, even taking it down one more level, maybe I'm not the leader of even my group. I'm just an individual. And, you know, I've seen some articles about things of, you know, what do you do if you see other behavior that you don't think is reflective of the way things should be now? Or maybe, again, I'm just an individual in an organization. I don't like the direction I'm going. How do you deal with that if you feel sort of powerless?
You know, most organizations have facilities to connect, whether it's through your human capital or otherwise. And I think, first and foremost, I approach most things that others are well-intended. They may not be well-informed, but they're well-intended. And I always find approaching the situation as if others are well-intended gets you to a place of balance. It gets you to a place of discussion and conversation, which leads to sharing, it leads to listening. And again, back to what I, you know, what I said a few minutes ago, perhaps stepping out as that first voice in the organization, looking for others, other similar organizations. Again, I reference CEO Action for Diversity and Inclusion as sources to confirm that this is a positive thing. And it's something that you want to be a leader in your organization, whether you're a leader in title or not. It's a real tremendous opportunity because it is a topic that creates caution in many. It is a topic that requires effort and work. And so I would start off with others are well-intended. They may not be well-informed, and go from there.
So Roy, one thing in this conversation, and I noted it when you and I spoke earlier, you're so positive, and it's almost like all of this is just like one positive step after another, but I'm sure it's not, doesn't necessarily seem that way every day. And, you know, we've got a lot of momentum now, but that may change. So how do you view that in terms of challenge?
Yeah. So we all have those tough days, and, you know, whether you're running a business or whether you're focused on working with clients to come together through a fellowship to impact policy in a positive way, it's really about people. It's really about what are you bringing to the table that's a differentiator for your organization, for yourself to get things done. And in that, I find positivity. I mean, it's challenges or challenges, but when you're surrounded by incredible people, and I'll step back, you know, when I look at the number of CEOs and corporations that have stepped forward around this topic, I'm incredibly encouraged. It doesn't make it easy. It doesn't mean we're going to get it right every time. But I'm encouraged by the willingness and the appreciation of the customer base, appreciation of the employee base to do something different. And I think that at CEO Action for Racial Equity, along with the fellows, which come from many of the clients on the phone, bringing the business lens to the table is something that's been missing. And I'm excited to be part of this team to bring it to the table. And I guess last but not least, on any given day, there are a number of things that we could do. And I find being hopeful, moving forward, relying on your colleagues on those down days gives me that extra boost to contribute what I can contribute and my experience to making a difference.
Yeah, and I guess that's good advice across the board, not just on this topic. So I appreciate that. So then, Roy, if I take a step back and think about what's happened this year versus maybe what happened 50 years ago or other points in time where as a society, we tried to deal with some of these issues. What do you think is different this time?
Yeah, arguably, and it's interesting, some of the areas of policy that we're looking at haven't changed for, you know, 50, 60, sometimes 70 years. And that's sort of lost on us. And one of the things that we quickly appreciated is when someone is expressing that they feel out of the loop or fallen through the gaps from a racial equity perspective, they're talking about principles of social justice. They're equity, rights, ability to participate and have access. And so whether they use those words or not, most things where people feel challenged, it's one of those. And so for us in this time, when you look back, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 years, we're now at this crossroads where we appreciate each other more these days. And I know that's sometimes hard to see. Fundamentally, we live in the best country in the world. And so when you start with that level of grounding, when you start with a willingness, and again, I keep going back to the corporate community because this is why I'm doing this. I believe that the corporate community gets done what they want to get done. We focus on an area, be it piece of policy for our sector or change in our business model, we get it done. And so I believe that's what makes this time unique. And while there are no promises, I believe that if and as we come together as a corporate community, we can help support and drive change.
Yeah, Roy, it's interesting when you were speaking, I was thinking that through some lenses, this is like the most polarized or, you know, divided we've been as a country. And then it's so encouraging for you to bring us back to, you know, we're the best country in the world. If we work together, we can really deal with this. And I guess that's where, again, this idea that corporations can't just wait for someone else to act, but that we need to help lead this change is something that's much different.
Yeah, Heather, that's exactly right. I mean, first and foremost, you can look at, and I know it's a bit of a cliche, it's half full, half empty. The truth of the matter is there are so many amazing people doing so many amazing things, Black, white, male, female. I mean, we have an incredible array of communities that care. People care. And give me caring any day, give me well-intentioned, and we can make some headway. And so that's fundamentally how I approach it and how I feel. And you're exactly right. I mean, the corporate voice on matters of policy, public policy on race, and candidly other community areas have been missing, but now it's here. And so I'm incredibly optimistic that we can turn that into success for our communities. And ultimately, a well-heeled society is the one that we all want to enjoy. I have a 13-year-old son and a 15-year-old daughter. And when I think about their future, and I think about the things that we can continue to do to enhance this amazing place that we live, you know, I just think sky's the limit.
Yeah, I have two teenagers too, as frequent listeners know. And I do think sometimes, in a way, they're maybe more prepared for some of these conversations than, you know, than we are. So that's, again, another optimistic way to look at the future. So
absolutely.
I want to go back to almost where we started, which is we were talking about the CEO Action for Racial Equity that you're leading. And I guess just the question, is it too early for you to give any sense of some of what you may be focused on?
So we are, I'd like to share that and then have an ask if I can, actually. We are focused on four particular areas: public safety, economic empowerment, health, and education. And in particular, as I mentioned earlier, we're taking a heavy data lens. And so we're looking across the array of areas throughout our states and cities. And, you know, when you look at the data, you see things, and this is something I wasn't aware of. So the gap between the best public schools in this country and some of the more challenged public schools in this country is $23 billion annually. And so that's a data point. And so, and there's a whole litany of reasons why that's the case. If you ask yourself, well, how do we help the more challenged public schools in this country perform better, help the students perform better? In that lies opportunities for the social contracts that I talked about with other corporations, innovation, and looking at some of the policies that would help support that throughout the country. I think we would all agree having a more educated society is a very positive thing. And so that's an example. I'll give you another quick example. So telehealth. One of the things when you look in the health pillar in certain communities around the country, there's a struggle to have sufficient primary health. The cost of insufficient health at a primary level is enormous. And so what we've seen with COVID-19, for example, is an increased reliance on telehealth. Candidly, in areas that didn't have access to telehealth, what we're seeing is it's an innovative way, a cost-effective way to increase access to primary health, which inures many benefits to us broadly as a society. And so we're looking at the policy. Because of COVID-19, there was a temporary allowance for telehealth. And we're looking at, does it make sense to make something like that more permanent? It's a great way to get at what the data reflects as challenging demographic areas with innovative ideas. So that's just a couple off the bat areas where we are focused on helping to drive change.
So if someone listening is specifically interested in the areas that you just talked about, what's the best way to get more educated?
CEO Action for Diversity and Inclusion. Please, if you're not involved, please take a look at that. And CEO Action for Racial Equity, which is, again, sort of a sub of diversity and inclusion, where we're looking for fellows. It's a great way to get your organization involved, raise your hand, or others to get involved. We're collectively working together. But I think aside from that, Heather, I talk to organizations all the time, CEOs all the time, and I haven't found an organization that doesn't have some area within it that they're focused on this. And so I would say, go talk inside your organization, ask the question, where is your organization focused? Is it education? Is it health? Is it economic empowerment? Is it around areas of public safety? That's probably the easiest, fastest way to get engaged is through your own organization.
All right. So then, Roy, just to wrap things up, I always like to end on this note. If you look ahead, you can pick the number of years. Where do you see us as a society compared to where we are today?
Yeah. So I'm hugely optimistic. I think, and sometimes it's hard to see through the cloud of, you know, perhaps the political fray, but I think we make progress every day. And one of the fundamental reasons I believe that is because we're talking. Even if we disagree, or even if we have different perspectives, we're talking and we're sharing. So number one, I believe that's positive. When I look 5 years out from now, I believe we will look back on this point in time as a pivotal shift. As I said earlier, there are policies that have been untouched for 70 years that need to be revisited, that one might argue is not totally fit for purpose. And so many, not just us, but many organizations, we're looking at that. The commitments from the corporate community, be it financial, substantial financial commitments, as well as lending employees to become fellows, as an example, to our organization and others. And this notion of bipartisan, mutual beneficial advancement is in the air. And so a lot of other stuff in the air as well. And maybe one might say you choose to listen to what you're listening to, but I'm incredibly optimistic. I would invite folks who are listening to this and the organizations they're connected with to take focus. And many of them are at this moment in this time. And so I think we'll look back and we will see that we've made milestones of a difference that we heretofore hadn't. So I'm super excited. Thank you, by the way, for hosting this conversation with your listeners. I know you have an expansive listening base, so I'm thrilled to be here and talk to you about this.
Well, I really found your comments to be inspiring. And I think, you know, we're recording this at the end of 2020, a year I think a lot of people just want to end, but we're releasing it at the beginning of 2021. And I think it's a nice note to start the year on such a positive note. And I do look forward to having you back to hear about what your organization is doing. So thank you for joining me today.
Thank you. I'd love to be back.
Thank you to Roy, and thank you for tuning in. To echo Roy's request, I urge you to visit the CEO Action for Diversity and Inclusion page at ceoaction.com. Join me back here every Tuesday and Thursday for new podcast episodes. Next Tuesday, we're talking about cash flow year-end reminders. Cash flows is a topic we've covered in past podcasts and in previous webcasts. So you may be asking, why talk about it again? Because you have questions, especially now with companies entering into new types of transactions to address pandemic-related cash flow needs. So that you never miss an episode of any of our audio content, subscribe to the PwC Accounting Podcast series wherever you listen to your podcasts. And to stay up to date on all of the latest content, let's connect on LinkedIn. For PwC, I'm Heather Horn. Thanks for tuning in.
This podcast is brought to you by PwC, all rights reserved. PwC refers to the U.S. member firm or one of its subsidiaries or affiliates, and may sometimes refer to the PwC network. Each member firm is a separate legal entity. Please see www.pwc.com/structure for further details. This podcast is for general information purposes only and should not be used as a substitute for consultation with professional advisors.